I'll assume my duties here one more time and introduce our third and final paper presenter. Sandra Rousseau is an assistant professor of French and Francophone studies at Carleton College in Minnesota. Last year, she earned her PhD from Penn State. Her dissertation analyzed the way humor, trauma, and history intersected to create what she coined comic memory. She is currently working on a manuscript developing the concept of comic memory in contemporary Franco-Algerian relations. That should be very interesting.
Thank you. Okay. So I'm going to talk about this bande dessinée called Petite Histoire des Colonies Françaises. And it's a new, it's kind of a side project that I'm developing, so I'm in the first stages. Okay. In the last decades, French bande dessinée writers have taken up history as one of their major sources of inspiration. Whether it is fictionalized, as in the case of the BD series Aliénor, or extremely realistic, like the books of Vautrin and Tardy's It Was the War of the Trenches or Le Cri du Peuple, bande dessinée have reshaped the dialogue between history and popular culture. This should not be surprising, as both the markets of bande dessinée and vulgarized history have maintained the renewed popularity they gained in the 1990s. In a 2010 official report to the Minister of Culture, the project for La Maison de l'Histoire de France was legitimized with this surprising sentence: Assurément, les Français ont le goût de l'histoire. So certainly French people like history. A taste so prevalent that it encourages the state to invest in museums, memorials, and scholarly research. Indeed, France is a big consumer of history, as is illustrated by the sheer number of historical magazines, books, and TV shows on the topic. Last summer, the documentary Secret d'Histoire on Louis XIV gathered almost 5 million viewers, 21% of people watching TV that night. Similarly, L'Histoire and Historia, two popular magazines, frequently sell about 80,000 copies each month. The interest for BD parallels that of history. Since 1995, the production of BD has quadrupled, with about 400 new BD on the market each month. The BD industry in 2013 was making more money than it ever had, and it's around 364 million euros. Producing historical BD is therefore a very sound economic decision, both on the part of the cartoonist and writers, the creative team, and on the part of the editor, the commercial team. But this production also raises the question of the kind of history that is produced, the genre of BD that mediates it, and the audience it appeals to. In this paper, I analyze Petite Histoire des Colonies Françaises, I'll refer to it as Petite Histoire from then on, created between 2006 and 2012 by writer Grégory Jarry and cartoonist Otto T. A close reading of the BD reveals that the historical material of the text is slippery, and that more than a book on French historical, on French colonial history, Petite Histoire actually offers a sarcastic reflection on historical writing. Although it brings together an appealing format and popular material, the BD does not subscribe to either the codes of traditional Franco-Belgian bande dessinée or those of vulgarized made-for-TV history. While the historical material has been thoroughly researched, neither the illustrations nor the text will take on the intellectual integrity associated with the grave subject of colonies and empires. The goal of the narrative is made very explicit in the first pages of the book. I'm going to move all of this here. Maybe. Okay, so this is the first page. De Gaulle, or rather his cartoonish representation, is on a mission to explain colonization to the readers. And he quotes at the top, "As far as I'm concerned, the history of French colonies is not a body of knowledge reserved for the elite. Every French person has a right to know what really happened, since the truth is bound to come out eventually." And I'd like to call your attention to the idea of reserved to the elite. It's not reserved for the elite. These first pages are paramount to the reading of Petite Histoire, because they establish a reading contract. That is, they suggest the degrees and modes on which to read the text. Not unlike Montaigne's famous Au Lecteur, Petite Histoire addresses the reader, identifies a narrative voice, here De Gaulle, as well as a possible audience, not the elite, and explains its goal to tell the truth. It is essential to understand this reading contract because it is at odds with both the mechanism of the book and its tone. For instance, the graphic representation of de Gaulle is unlike any other representation of the general. So here you have on the left the kind of usual representation of de Gaulle, and on the right the one they've chosen for the book. De Gaulle is unlike any representation of the general, traditionally caricatured through his specular physique as an extremely tall, thin military man with a big nose. De Gaulle appears here as the antinomy of his former caricatured self. He's short, he's a bowling ball rather than a stick, and he does not have any particular physical attributes beside his uniform that would allow his identification. De Gaulle is nothing like the De Gaulle we, readers supposedly not belonging to the elite, know. Moreover, the tone of the very first words of the text shows a level of provocation and sarcasm that goes against the premise of truth. Okay, so I'm going to translate the text. Ladies and gentlemen, dear fellow countrymen, if today France is one of the best nations in the world, it is because in the past, France knew to take part in the most beautiful of human enterprises. That is colonization. And I am here with you tonight to tell you the fabulous history of the French colonies. This quote brings about a series of questions. Is the text what its title suggested, a history of colonies? Is it an ironic history of colonies? Or is it a fictionalized history of the French Empire? The answers to these questions are as unstable as the medium itself. No science, whether iconic or linguistic, can be trusted, because no science can be taken to mean what it appears to signify. And yet, this rhetoric of inconsistencies enables a surprisingly visual reflection on history writing through the use of irony. So I will first analyze how Petite Histoire comments on history writing, and then I'll talk a bit more on irony towards the end. De Gaulle, and in later books Mitterrand, take readers on a 500-page chronological journey through the French Empire. Each book is organized around a concept. The first one is called French America, the second, the Empire, the third, decolonization, the fourth, France-Afrique, and the fifth, immigrants. The overall structure of the BD is very stable. A former president explains the contexts and events that have made France the nation it is today. The BD medium might suggest a seemingly popular and easily decipherable presentation of history. Yet, this apparent simplicity is negated by the instability of language and iconic signs, which can be noticed on several levels. We've seen earlier how individual drawings and outrageous texts can shift the reader's expectation to point to the mechanics of history writing. In calling attention to historiography, the book does not only suggest that writing history requires choices, but also, and most importantly, that historical discourses are the result of power structure, a point that echoes the then quite recent attempt by Sarkozy to have history professors teach the positive role of colonization. So that was in 2005, and this book came out in 2006. This didactic move on the part of the writers explains why political figures lead the tour of French colonial history. De Gaulle, Mitterrand, and others do not only get to lead France in making political decisions, they also get to decide what to share with the readers of Petite Histoire and how to write it. The tour de force of the BD, then, is to make this structure visible to readers and to apply its irony to both the narrative of the past and the making of that narrative. In so doing, the text takes up the questions that have shaped history as an academic discipline and highlights the somewhat sterile separation between what past is being told, how it is being told, and why, a point long developed by philosophers and historians alike. But that I think it's a point or a discussion that may not have entered popular spaces as much as academic ones. Autauté and Jarry use two strategies to suggest how historical materials comes to be selected and shared. The first is to follow Anstoller and Frederick Cooper's advice to, and I quote, bring metropole and colony into a single analytic field, overcoming the tendency of the one to go out of focus as the other comes in. In sum, metropoles and colonies cannot be conceived individually, but need to be integrated in a comprehensive picture of flux, interrelations, and centers of powers so that the concepts of margins and centers are constantly put into question. In Petite Histoire, for instance, colonization and the development of the French Empire are inscribed in what would usually be considered European history, that is, the tension and succession wars in France and England. And you can see that here. So I'm not going to translate, but this is Philippe le Bel and his children. And the text basically says something like, everything was going great, Philippe le Bel had four kids, and after the first one, it would have been better for him if he caught mumps. Right? Therefore, he would not have had any other kids, and the French Empire would have been so much easier to develop. The concept of conflicting colonial projects is, of course, not new information for anyone studying history. But it might be surprising for a public that associates colonization with the Caribbean and Africa. In displaying the ways in which conflicts in the metropole generated conflicts in North America, Petite Histoire establishes the colonial question in a space, Western Europe, and a time, the Middle Ages, not usually associated with popular images of colonialism. Blanchard, Pascal Blanchard, has argued that colonial and post-colonial histories are marginalized because, I quote, they hold a strong ability to destabilize national unity and the social body, end of quote. Thankfully, this argument is becoming less and less true as far as scholarly research is concerned. However, in more popular and socially heterogeneous spaces, there are still very few cultural objects carrying an obvious didactic post-colonial information. Petite Histoire does not only attempt to demarginalize colonial history, it also confronts readers with their potential lack of knowledge, highlighting the absence of colonial historiography in the public space. The denouncing enterprise of the book is made evident in the different titles of the different books that exist, and they all suggest the diachronic dimension of colonization and its connection to the very visible sphere of politics and finance. So I'm now going to discuss the other way that Petite Histoire goes against the grain in highlighting the writing of history. And they do that through a clever use of narrative structure. Readers do not have access to historical information. Instead, they are forced to rely on De Gaulle's perception and selection of events. For instance, Petite Histoire notes the importance of Jacques Cartier, but discusses it in the broader context of colonial conquest and French and Native American relations. This reframing, initiated by De Gaulle, marks a shift from popular and vulgarized historiography. Michel de Certeau has noted that the movement from scientific to popular or literary history impacts how history is conceived because it modifies the ways in which historical data is transmitted. Petite Histoire, it seems, tries to strike a balance between two historical discourses, the heavy and complex discourse of scientific history and the sometimes insulting discourse of oversimplification. Yeah. Certeau's reflections on various historical modes are helpful here in understanding how a balanced and accessible discussion of the past would work. And I'm going to quote Certeau, so it's a little bit intense. He notes, if, therefore, the story of what happened disappears from scientific history, in order, in contrast, to appear in popular history, or if the narrative of fact takes on the allure of a fiction belonging to a given type of discourse, we cannot conclude that the reference to the real is obliterated. This reference has instead been somewhat displaced. So what he's saying is that the sign is displaced and it highlights the fact that everything is unstable. In Saussurean terms, the signified has a new, more popular signifier. Certeau continues, it, so the reference, is no longer immediately given by narrated or reconstituted object. It is implied by the creation of models. Certeau's choice of words here is extremely pertinent to the analysis of Petite Histoire, because the text oscillates between giving information and implying criticism. In this rhetoric of implied references lies the possibility of irony. References are not given, they are implied, just like a critique is implied in an ironic statement about colonialism. So, yeah. Petite Histoire is first and foremost an ironic text. It implies one thing by showing another. Through sarcasm, a virulent form of irony, Petite Histoire suggests that it is aware of what the readers have been taught and why this knowledge might be limited, creating a context in which the narration makes visible its power on the readers. So, when Jacques Cartier does enter the story, De Gaulle announces, "Oh, Jacques Cartier, finally, a name we know," right? Jacques Cartier, enfin un nom connu. And I have to say that as I was reading the book, I mean, I know medieval history a little bit, but it's not my forte. That was exactly my feeling. That was like, oh, Jacques Cartier, finally, something I learned in school. Okay, so the bumptious style of this historical narrative is evident in the five books of Petite Histoire, but more so in the first one, which constitutes a preliminary stage in understanding the critical verb of the text. Irony is diffused throughout the stories, in the text itself, in the images, or sometimes in the contrast between the two. The text, always sarcastic and often funny, through its use of dated idiomatic expressions, is filled with historical data. Numbers, dates, names, places. They enable readers who might want to check the veracity of what is being told. And indeed, facts do not always match reality. So for example, the book explains the origin of the word Quebec, and they explain that with a picture of a caribou and caribou droppings, and explain that that's where the word Quebec comes from, and it's absolutely not true. Okay, so in contrast, the drawings are overly simplistic. People are elaborated stickmen, and the backgrounds are as minimalistic as the characters. Additionally, the color scheme of the bande dessinée is very modest. Each book has three colors, white, black, and a third color specific to each volume. This aesthetic and formal distance between the text and the images constitutes the core of the text's irony. So we have one, on the top we have an elaborated prose filled with historical data, and on the bottom we have a very simplistic drawing that sometimes doesn't match the text. So we're going to look at it here. For example, in book four, when Mitterrand describes De Gaulle's return to power in 1958, he notes, "In Algeria, Salon supervised Operation Referendum. The army nicely escorted Algerians to the voting stations and organized the counting of votes. On the day of the results, the yes votes won in France and in the colonies. De Gaulle could finally catch a breath. With this, the media twisted around his right little finger and the army and the police around his left little finger, democracy in the Fifth Republic was going to be a walk in the park." The text itself is quite funny because of the language register, of course, because we do not usually associate idiomatic expressions like a walk in the park with political commentary, or at least not in historical recounting of political events. However, the humor of the scene increases when readers realize that the drawings are in stark contradiction with the linguistic information on the page. So, on the image you see a man, an Algerian you can assume, who's going to vote, and he doesn't know how to read, so he asks the French administration, who obviously lies to him, so that he would vote for De Gaulle. But the Algerian man knows that he's being lied to because he's understood how the colonial system works, and so he ends up voting for what he actually wants. So you have it here. And then you have another woman who shows up, and she kind of goes through the same ordeal, except that she decides to actually follow the administrator's advice because she knows that he probably lied to the first one. Right? So it's all messy. But we can tell that there's already a couple of things that are in stark contradiction, and the first one would be l'armée accompagnait gentiment, so nicely, Muslim people to the booth, and you see a guy with a gun, right? So you understand that it's not going to be telling the truth. There's another one that I could show. So this is Lyotet in Morocco, and apparently he loves the culture there, and he's extremely happy. Is like a father for Moroccans, and you see him here with American guy, okay, slapping his butt. So not a great father figure, I guess. Okay. So this multi-layered irony is humorous, and it opens a space for discussing an often extremely violent aspect of the past. In using irony, Jarry and Autoté authorize and encourage a popular and critical history of the French Empire. They demonstrate that historical material is not out of bounds for humor, and that irony is a serious enterprise, which, although it signifies through slippage, so it does not say what it means or it does not mean what it says, can at least question the structures of signification. However, one question subsists, and it is central to understanding the cultural value of Petite Histoire. Who is the public for such a text? Can the subtleties of the text come through in various contexts? And most importantly, is irony always identifiable as such? One answer can arise from a discussion of BD, the so-called ninth art, as a cultural object that has never been fully legitimized, and that consequently seeks a revered cultural status. In trying to gain legitimation, the medium has undergone changes, and particularly a shift from the traditional album to the more literary graphic novel format. And that change, the core of that change happens at this time, in 2005-2006, in France. Graphic novels are believed to have more in common with literature, a supposedly higher form of art that has maintained its legitimacy over time. It is unclear whether BD readership have adapted to graphic novels, or whether graphic novels have brought to the fore a new kind of readership. The facts are that most BD readers today are young and educated. They are, in short, the perfect crowd for sarcasm and irony. So they are the same people that would watch The Daily Show here in the US or Le Petit Journal in France. Is there a risk, then, that Petite Histoire meets a public not capable of perceiving irony? It is possible, especially if readers are uneducated in the field of history. The format and the tone of the book make it look like a text that would appeal to anyone wanting to learn about the French Empire. And I would like to call back to your attention the idea of the text is not for the elite. But this book is most likely targeting educated readers who already have an interest in the subject of colonization and who would already question the conservative discourses that most politicians have been spreading. If readers are unable to tell what is plausible and what isn't, they will probably still be able to perceive that French history, as it is taught through mainstream media, has been shaped to dissimulate the incriminating details of the French colonial enterprise. Regardless of the perception of irony, then, Petite Histoire highlights the fascinating and always shifting intersection between popular and elitist cultural productions. More importantly, at least for me, it also sheds a light on the ways in which humor has been and still is a primary mode of remembering the past. Thank you.